Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 223 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Gray.
Hello, Dave.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, back quite soon since I last came on after that big gap I had over the summer, but yes. I'm doing quite well, yes.
Yes. So what have you been up to recently?
Dave, I need an intervention. Something's going wrong with my life. So obviously, now I am no longer a teacher and I've had more time in my life. I get to the end of an evening and normally I'd be so tired I need to be rushing to bed. I find myself channel surfing and I've ended up being absolutely swamped by the reality TV that autumn normally sweeps. So frustratingly, I've been watching things like The Circle, The Apprentice, First Dates Hotel. I got into Interior Design Masters.
No.
I need to stop. I need help.
There's so much decent drama out there. Why are you watching this rubbish?
I know, and I've got a wait list on my Netflix and on my Sky that's ridiculous, and yet I still like lying there like, I'm just going to catch up on The Circle. Anyway, I will get out of that. I will shake myself off and I will get out of that very soon. I have managed to finish a couple of other little things and start some new bits. So I finished The Reluctant Landlord, which is Rama Sranganathan's show, which is based in Crawley, apparently, which is just up the road from me. And I'm always trying to work out where they do outside shots, if it's actually in Crawley or not, and I can't quite work it out. And then that led me straight on to watching Motherland came back on BBC Two, but it got dropped to the box set, and I'm already three episodes in. That programme is so funny and has got such good talent in the cast. If anyone didn't see the first season, which went out about 18 months ago, it was absolutely brilliant. And this season just picks up exactly where it sort of needs to. And it's really funny, really observational. It's about like mums at the school gate sort of thing and the competitiveness of mums and carrying their jobs. And there's brilliant performances out there as well.
Fabulous.
Finally finished The Crown season one. I now have a month. Yes, I know. I now have a month left to finish Crown season two before I get to see Olivia Colman.
Yes.
So I am going to be starting to really crash through that. I'm going on holiday next week, so that might well be a holiday watch or a plane watch. Cool. I've got one episode left of each of A Confession, which is the Martin Freeman drama, and The Capture, which is a Holiday Granger drama on BBC. So I've got one episode each of those, which is going to sort of like, I'm going to try and finish those before I go on holiday next week.
How are those two being? Because I haven't watched either of them yet, and I keep on wanting to get to them.
The Capture was brilliant. It's all about making you paranoid.
I'd heard that. That's the one I was going to go for first, I think.
A really, really strong plot. I've just watched episode five, which was like the big reveal and sort of unpicked episode 1 to 4. No spoilers at all, but that was fascinating. I'm like to see where they go. I've tried to ignore social media, but a few people have said that episode 5 is better than episode 6. They felt episodes, but you know, I can't comment until I've watched it. And A Confession. Now, when we watched the first episode, we were like, are they trying to make this true story too dramatic by having these like bits that, you know, did that? But as we've gone on, watched episode 5 just last night, actually, we were just like, oh, wow, where's this going to go? So I'm really looking forward to episode 6, which I think we're going to watch tonight just to sort of see it out, which should be good. And when they're off my list, I can go to my watch list, and I've got a few things that I really want to start adding. Like, I'm still like chipping away at Schitt's Creek on Netflix. I still watch The Good Place when it comes out weekly.
Yeah.
But I've added El Camino and The Politician as things I want to watch. Please, no spoilers on El Camino if we talk about that later, because it dropped on Friday, but I've just had the busiest weekend. Yeah. And so I'm not going to get a chance to watch it probably until this weekend or when I'm on holiday next week. So that's pretty much me. No gaming this time, Dave, so I'm not going to be caught by saying any wrong games or anything like that. So it's over to you, Dave. Yes. What have you been up to?
You've not been suffering withdrawal symptoms from not being able to play Fortnite for 2 days, like the rest of the internet. Not that I ever really played Fortnite. Apparently, it is back up now because there was a whole thing. They basically destroyed the island that Fortnite is based on and replaced it with a black hole for like 2 days. And it is now all back up, apparently. There is now Chapter 2 running and they've revamped
the game. I'm relieved.
So, yes. So lots of 12-year-old children rocking backwards and forwards in their bedrooms. So, yeah, for me, though, TV-wise, Swamp Thing, which was on Amazon, I watched the whole of that series. It's 10 episodes long, not coming back for a second season. That first season actually rounds off quite nicely, so don't be too afraid to kind of go and watch it as just a self-contained thing. It's obviously based on the comic book property. It was a DC Universe title, which they weirdly kind of got leaked after one episode went out. They cancelled it and it wasn't coming back. It seems to have been a financial reason for that happening. If you actually watch the series, the swamp set, because obviously Swamp Thing, it's based in a swamp. The swamp set for that is quite spectacular, and part of the problem apparently was the fact that the swamp set itself was going to cost them an absolute fortune to put away somewhere to keep hold of if they were going to come back for another season. So that was one of the budgetary constraints, which is one of the reasons why it didn't come back. But I really, really like that series, and I thought they did a wonderful job with it. It's one of the best adaptations, because there have been a few kind of variations of Swamp Thing in the past, but it is one of the best versions that I've seen of that character. Quite true to the comic books, I think. It's got a very dark horror kind of feel to it. Fits in really well. What is slightly frustrating is Swamp Thing works quite a lot in the comic books with Constantine. And I can really see Matt Ryan's Constantine fitting into that show very, very well. And unfortunately, it's not going to be returning. If you like your sort of comic book stuff, particularly if you like them with more of a sort of horror edge to it, if you watch that Constantine series that went out on NBC and again, only ran for one season, I think Swamp Thing is something that is very much worth watching. This is coming from somebody that doesn't hugely do horror things, but I think there's enough of a good mix of comic book stuff and horror stuff in there to kind of level it all out. But I thought it was a really, really solid adaptation of it, and such a shame that they're not making more of it, unfortunately. But
I had listened to a few rumors on forums and things like that about that there's something not quite right. There's not a full explanation. Even some of the cast and production team were like, we're making an amazing show. We've got really good comments and it's critical acclaim. And so people are just saying there's something a little bit fishy. I don't know if fish can survive in a swamp, but it's just a little bit fishy going on there. And it is sad when they do make these sort of like well created dramas that are received well and there isn't a clear explanation, or I'm just ashamed that if it is finances,
I mean, it seems to have been mainly finance stuff that has caused it, because I mean, it was very critically acclaimed when the first episode came out and people really, really liked it. So it was such a shame that they decided to pre-cancel that already, pretty much. But definitely worth going and watching. It's on Amazon Prime if you want to catch that season. And as I say, don't worry too much. It does round it off reasonably nicely. I mean, there are sort of a couple of threads left dangling that they could have picked up for further seasons, but there's no like big cliffhanger at the end. It works okay as a self-contained thing. So I think it is worth going to look at. Raising Dion, I completely finished as well now, which I've very much enjoyed. Comic book adaptation again, although it's not really a particularly well-known comic book, but it is a comic book adaptation. This is about the little boy that develops superpowers, and it's sort of where those superpowers come from. And the story is more really based around the mother, and the first episode is titled How to Raise a Superhero, and a lot of it is sort of about that. It's what do you do when your six-year-old child starts to develop superpowers and he's a six-year-old child, and how do you manage that? Not only raising this small child as a single parent and dealing with all that, but he also can float things around the room and can kind of disappear. And, you know, it's a really interesting kind of setup. And as the show goes on, you get more and more into the reasons why he suddenly got these powers and what's going after him. There's a really interesting twist that comes towards the end as well, which obviously I won't spoil, but I thought that was really well done. Very, very solid series. And I hope they renew that for another one. It seems to have been going down fairly well on Netflix. So I hope that we will see more of that. It was a good solid series. El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie, I absolutely loved. I think it's a wonderful addition to the Breaking Bad franchise. It's a great way of rounding off Jesse's story, which, you know, had a reasonable ending at the end of Breaking Bad with him just kind of driving off into the distance. But I rather like that you get a sort of more rounded conclusion with this about what happens to Jesse sort of post Breaking Bad. And there's some great little cameos in it. It's fabulous. If you're a fan of Breaking Bad, go and watch it. It's brilliant. If you want to hear more about the review of that, I did a podcast with Matt over at Entertainment Talk. You can go and find that. And we did a sort of full review on El Camino over there. And the other thing, now I've finished my run through the MCU, I've started on a run through Star Wars and have forced myself to watch The Phantom Menace. And I'm about halfway through Attack of the Clones at the moment. The Phantom Menace, I think it's fair to say, does not stand up particularly well, particularly the CGI. I mean, the CGI, it looks quite bad, actually, at this point. And I don't remember it looking quite as bad as it did. Maybe I'm just kind of spoilt with the modern CGI. But it's one of those things that I think if George still had control of Lucasfilm and was looking at it now, he'd be going back and tinkering with it. You know how George Lucas went back and sort of messed around with some of the original movies and put bits in and stuff. I think if George was still in complete control of the Star Wars franchise now, he would probably go back and be tinkering with the Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, because that CGI work really doesn't stand up. I mean, the dialogue's as bad as it always was, but that's sort of a hallmark of those early Star Wars films anyway. So, I mean, that's whatever. But I don't know whether it's just we've been spoiled by some of the later films like Rogue One and even the new trilogy. I don't know, but it doesn't stand up particularly well at all. And the first half of the Attack of the Clones has a similar problem. Second half gets sort of better because you've got more kind of action stuff in there and the story gets a little bit more interesting. But it is kind of trudging through. I'm not a huge fan of those prequels, but I sort of felt that I needed to watch them because I want to watch the whole thing in order. I'm going to do Solo and I'm going to do Rogue One and I'm going to try and do them all in chronological order rather than doing it any other way. So I am about halfway through Attack of the Clones at the moment. I will be continuing that journey throughout the next few weeks. And that's all the stuff I've been doing this week. Should we move on to some TV and film news?
Oh, I can't wait to talk about this.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
We start off the TV news with renewals, cancellations and pickups. And I think we're going to start off with what's become slightly the elephant in the room. The Sky One Arrowverse Batwoman fiasco. Certainly if you've been on the website recently and you've been looking through the comments section, there's been a lot of discussion about what has been going on with the Arrowverse on Sky One, what has been going on with Batwoman. So it became apparent that Sky One were not going to air the Arrowverse Batwoman series. Now, if you're a fan of the Arrowverse, you know why that is a problem, because there is a huge, huge crossover event coming, and Batwoman is one of the shows which is part of that crossover. There is an episode of Batwoman in that crossover. However, news leaked out from the Sky Help Team Twitter account claiming that it's not that they haven't picked it up, it's that Warner Media, who are the parent company for Warner Brothers, CW, HBO, DC Universe, and a whole bunch of other things, are not allowing Sky to pick it up because they are retaining the show for a streaming service service they're planning to launch in the UK. The problem is WarnerMedia have not announced that they're launching a streaming service in the UK. So it's difficult to know whether somebody at the Sky Help team has got the wrong end of the stick, or whether this is genuinely true and is WarnerMedia holding on to this show. Although it would go some way to explain the disappearance of some of the other shows, but we'll get on to that. WarnerMedia, like I say, don't have a service launching in the UK as far as we're aware at the moment. They have HBO Max launching spring 2020 in the US, and they also have control of DC Universe, the streaming service, but they haven't announced anything outside of the US right now. But if this rumor is correct that they are launching a streaming service, at the very, very earliest, we're going to get it in spring next year. And that's if they suddenly announce that they launch HBO Max UK is going to launch at the same time as HBO Max US. And you kind of think they would have said something about that by now.
I think with all the streaming, that you've got to get it out there and let people know to make their choices. Because if Apple arrives in November and people start committing to their payments, but they don't know what's coming around the market, and you try and flood it next spring, people are going to start saying no. People are going to be like, you know, there's a limitation.
Yeah. And at some point you've got Disney Plus coming as well. So you've got that to add into the mix. Mm. So that's going to be another streaming service. So what are the impacts of this? Well, in terms of the Arrowverse, what it basically means is, as of right now, Sky One only have 4 of the 5 episodes of that crossover, which means 1/5 of the story is going to be missing. Sky, as we understand it, are desperately trying to convince Warner to give them just the crossover episode, but as of right now, none of that is confirmed. And we know that they have Supergirl, Arrow and Flash, and presumably Legends coming back, although that isn't completely confirmed, but we presume that Legends will come next year. It's not aired in the US yet. It's coming mid-season in the US, so that's early next year. Mm. So that's why there's no announcement on Legends yet. But we know they have Supergirl, Arrow and Flash coming back. Hopefully, they manage to sort out some sort of deal to get that Batwoman crossover episode. But at the moment, it's looking like the crossovers are going to come out in December and Sky aren't going to be able to air 1/5 of that story, which is a huge issue. And what's frustrating is if WarnerMedia aren't going to announce this streaming service, and certainly it's highly unlikely they're going to have anything out by the end of the year, it's just going to push people towards pirating that episode.
Exactly.
And the problem is, once people go and start pirating things and realize that they can do it and they can find it online, they're more likely to do it in the future. Mm. So this is a really bizarre strategy if that is what's going on. But at the moment, we don't know.
It definitely is having a negative effect on audiences, because I am worried also about the number of streaming sites we're going to get in the future. I do believe piracy is going to become more prevalent as more people realize they can't afford all these streaming sites. But the crossover episode discussion with the Arrowverse, they are so key to mapping the storyline. So for example, I am a Chicago Fire and a Chicago Med viewer, but I've never been a Chicago PD viewer. And every season they do a successful crossover, and as I'm not a Chicago PD viewer, I never really miss out. There's enough, because they're all really set in their own episodes and it's just a few characters coming over, you still get the gist of the crossover episode and I never feel like I miss out. But I'm not an Arrow viewer, but I know as we come up to the crossover, I have to watch those Arrow episodes because they're so key to how it maps in to the entire story. So the viewers for an Arrowverse series are more passionate, more engaged and more committed. And so this is going to have a more impact. Yeah, people can get away with not watching a Chicago Med and still catch up with the two. Mm. And it works because they're so procedural. They're so matter of fact. And they actually have enough of a flashback to let you know what's going on.
Right.
But I think the impact of of being the comic book like driven narrative, it's sad really that, you know, I am one and I'll hold my hands up, probably be saying this, but I will go and pirate it so that I don't feel like I've missed out. I would rather go to a streaming platform and watch the episode than not watch it and feel like I've missed out. Or I'll be ringing my family in America and getting them to ship over DVDs.
Well, yeah. And the problem is that the entire final season of Arrow is almost based around gearing up towards that crisis event.
Yes.
And then suddenly you're going to get there and one fifth of it is going to be missing. Mm. So it's bizarre. And, you know, if it isn't Sky's fault and if it is Warner Media, that's a really stupid choice on Warner Media's part. I mean, maybe they don't care, but it's not going to win them any huge amount of goodwill if they then suddenly go, hey, we've got the streaming service. Like, well, that's great, but why didn't you do something about this earlier when we actually needed the episode in there? Mm. I mean, the other impact of this, of course, is Sky Atlantic and HBO.
Yeah.
Because the likelihood is, if, and I stress if, because this is all kind of guesswork at the moment, if HBO Max launches in the UK, that probably means the Sky Atlantic HBO carriage deal, which was for 5 years and is due to end next year, isn't going to get renewed either. Because why on earth would Warner Media, who own HBO, carry on allowing Sky Atlantic to air HBO shows if they've got their own platform to put it on?
Mm.
So I suspect that will probably end as well, and all the HBO shows will end up moving across. It may be that even if there is a streaming service, it is in some way integrated into the Sky Q box.
Yeah, that just crossed my mind, because Sky have got to be worried right now.
Well, I mean, you may have noticed that Sky have spent an awful lot of money not only signing a co-production deal with HBO, which guarantees that they get to keep shows like Chernobyl, because they co-produced it, but they have also spent a lot of money on producing new original content themselves as well. Mm. Things like Britannia, that sort of stuff. They have been ramping that up quite a lot, I think, possibly because they knew this was a possibility. As I say, it may be that if, and again, I stress if HBO Max does launch in the UK, it could end up being an app, something like the, you know, how Netflix is integrated onto Sky Q now.
Yeah.
They could do it in the same way as that. So it at least feels part of the same service. And Sky does have this production deal with HBO. So you kind of would think that they wouldn't want to burn all their bridges. They want to keep some sort of relationship going there. That may be how it ends up working out. At the moment, we just don't know. In terms of other Warner Media shows, this could go to explain why E4 haven't managed to pick up the last two seasons of Supernatural, because that's also controlled by Warner Media, because that's a CW show. We've also discovered that Dynasty, which was on Netflix, isn't coming next day anymore. It's coming as a box set in 2020 due to the change in the deal that they had for that. And Black Lightning, which used to air usually within a sort of week of the US, has still not shown up on Netflix UK as of today. And there was a tweet that went out last week saying, if and when it shows up, we'll let you know. But that sort of if is a bit dubious, you know, so we may not be getting the third season of Black Lightning either. It's not clear at the moment. There's also a number of other CW shows like Roswell, New Mexico, Legacies, the new Nancy Drew series, which haven't had UK pickups yet. So it's really difficult to know what's going on and whether any of that is related or not. The problem is that nobody's talking. We've reached out to Warner Media. They won't say anything. The Sky One press team will only give us the official line of, we have no plans to air Batwoman. E4 are very hesitant to say things because they still have some deals in place with Warner Media over stuff. That's the most frustrating thing, is we just don't know at the moment. So a lot of this is guesswork and, you know, little bits of information that have dropped out. So The basic upshot of it is, as far as we're aware at the moment, the Batwoman series is not going to come to the UK. That could be because Warner Media are planning to launch a streaming service at some point, but they haven't announced anything yet. It's really going to screw everything up. At the moment, nobody's talking, nobody's saying anything official. We can't give you any more information than that. So that's how it is right now. It's a mess.
I know. Let's hope for a Kevin Feige Spider-Man type announcement within the next week, or even maybe after we've finished recording today's episode. Let's hope. some sense comes to everybody within a matter of time, and we'd get another announcement, and we'd be positive about it in a few weeks' time.
That would be good. Yeah. I mean, at the moment, I would be happy if they can just announce they've got the crossover episode. For me, that's the biggest issue right now. Yes, it sucks to not have the last two seasons of Supernatural and stuff like that on E4, but we don't know whether that's directly related or not. But the real spanner in the works is that crossover episode of Batwoman for the Arrowverse, and Sky really, really need that. And the moment, we just don't know. So moving on to other renewals and cancellations and pickups and stuff, there is a bunch of pickups. We're starting to get into that part of the year. E4 has picked up the linear rights to Star Trek Discovery, so it will still premiere on Netflix. That is still the plan as far as we know. The third season will be on there. However, these are sort of second run broadcast rights, so they will be airing Star Trek Discovery from season one. They've also picked up the Matt LeBlanc sitcom series, which I think he's in season four, coming from season one, that is Man with a Plan. And they've just announced they've picked up Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which hasn't actually aired at all yet on either side of the Atlantic, which is a new musical dramedy series. Stars Jane Levy as a computer coder based in San Francisco, and there is an unusual event which means that she starts hearing the innermost wants and desires of people around her through songs. So it's a big kind of silly musical dramedy series.
Crazy ex-girlfriend style.
It's that sort of thing. It's got a really, really good cast. Skylar Astin from Pitch Perfect, Alex Newell from Glee, Peter Gallagher from The OC, Lauren Graham from Gilmore Girls is in there. So there's some great people involved in that. I am quite looking forward to that. I think it sounds wonderfully silly. And no, they haven't announced when that's going to air yet, because as I say, it's not gone out in the US either. It's going mid-season, so early 2020 on NBC. Hopefully E4 won't be too far behind when they air it as well, but they have picked that up. Moving off E4 and over onto Amazon Prime, if you've not got an Amazon Prime subscription right now, you might want to ask for one for Christmas, because there's a whole bunch of really interesting things that they've managed to pick up. The Jason Bourne spin-off series Treadstone, that is coming Friday the 10th of January 2020, that is landing. The Star Trek Picard series, which I think they previously announced they picked up, we've got a date for that. That's 24th of January. That is arriving. They've also picked up this new teen-led Walking Dead spin-off series, which is premiering spring 2020. So that is going to be going on there. We have an air date for Outlander season 5. That's coming February 16th on Stars in the US, which means it should be Monday 17th of February in the UK. Although they haven't officially confirmed it's going out next day, but it has every other year, so I don't see why it wouldn't this year. And Vikings, sixth and final season of that, we've got an air date for that. That is going to be December 4th on History in the US. So it should be Thursday, 5th of December on Amazon Prime in the UK. Although, again, not officially confirmed, but it's always been next day previously, so there's no reason to think it wouldn't be now. So Amazon Prime, definitely something that should be on your Christmas list, I think, if you haven't got a subscription for that already, because there's some really good shows, not to mention the Lord of the Rings series and The Boys and all the other wonderful things they've got on that service already. So get yourself an Amazon Prime subscription.
I've got mine until July next year, I think.
Yeah, well worth. Plus, you get free shipping on everything. Yeah, it's exactly. Well worth picking up. it's not meant to be a plug for Amazon Prime, but it is a really good service. It is worth picking up. Moving on to other streaming services, Apple TV has picked up the World War II drama Masters of the Air from the Band of Brothers and Pacific team. This was originally planned about 2013, I think it was started to be developed for HBO, and it's the third part of the trilogy, basically, of the Band of Brothers, the Pacific trilogy. It's from the same guys. It's based on a proper historical book, and they've kind of turned it into a dramatic series, which I think is pretty much what they did with the previous ones. It's Steven Spielberg, it's Tom Hanks. They're both involved in it, and their production companies are involved in it as well. It's based around the American Bomber Boy series, which is the 8th Air Force crewman who fought the Nazi forces in World War II, the American Air Force crewman. I loved the first two series they did. Band of Brothers, I think, is a fabulous piece of TV. The Pacific was great as well. I'm really interested to see what they do with this third one. And Apple seems like a good place for it to land. They've got the pockets deep enough for it, you know. So,
you know what? I've always felt like I should watch Band of Brothers. You hear so many great things about it, and the cast always refer to it in interviews. And I don't know what age I was when that originally came out, whether it was just something that really didn't come onto my radar. But there's so much out there, Dave. I don't know if I've got enough time. I'm trying to watch The Crown from 2 years ago.
That's true. It is worth catching if you've not seen it. It's an incredible series, and they sort of, you know, as well as the drama stuff, they intercut footage of genuine interviews with people that were alive at the time and people that were in the trenches. It's really, really fascinating and just brilliant drama. Those two are well worth watching. I'm very interested to see what they do with Masters of the Air. One of the reasons that it didn't end up on HBO was the price tag, because they are looking to spend at least $250 million on producing this series, which seems quite a lot. And HBO were kind of balking a bit at the price tag for it. But Apple, of course, is Apple and not exactly short of cash. So they've stepped in and they will now have the whole of the series. The original Band of Brothers and Pacific together picked up 43 Emmy nominations and 14 Emmy wins. So, you know.
Not much. That's standard.
Yeah, pretty decent. This is Apple's second collaboration with Spielberg, because they're also reviving his Amazing Stories series as well. And they also announced that they've got an overall deal with Alfonso Cuarón, the man behind Roma and Gravity, to make some TV shows, which could be kind of interesting because he's a great director. So that's looking good. But if you're a fan of World War II drama, Apple TV, which launches on 1st of November worldwide, that's the way you're supposed to do it, Warner.
Yes, exactly. Give it to the audience. It's the audience that should be like getting the best deal.
Yeah, so launches worldwide. You can get it in a whole bunch of different places as well. There's apps coming to various devices and stuff. But Apple TV, 1st of November. Don't know when Masters of the Air will actually be released. It will probably be a few years off yet, but there are some great stuff coming to Apple TV already. Moving on, Hulu has announced the cast for their live-action Marvel Hellstrom series. News dropped last week that Hulu would not be moving forward with the planned Ghost Rider series, which they announced at the same time as Hellstrom, but that was apparently over creative differences. They didn't like the direction it was going, but they are still carrying on with the Hellstrom series. They're still very, very much behind it. Hellstrom is another comic book adaptation, obviously. Follows Damian and Anna Hellstrom, son and daughter of a mysterious and powerful serial killer. The siblings have a complicated dynamic as they track down the worst of humanity, each with their attitude and skills. They have announced that Tom Austin will take the role of Damon. He's a professor of ethics who moonlights as an exorcist and has no illusion about saving a world he has no patience for. He just hopes that he can help a few people closest to him. Sydney Lemon, who was in Succession and Fear the Walking Dead, he's playing Anna, the sister. By day, Anna runs a successful auction house and suffers no fools, but her true interest lies in hunting down those who hurt others. Elizabeth Marvel, appropriately named, given it to Marvel show, who is in Homeland. She portrays Victoria Hellstrom, who is the mother of Damon and Anna. Robert Wisdom, who was in Ballers and Watchmen, will star as caretaker, guardian of knowledge of the occult. June Carl, who is in Mindhunter and Dead Women Walking, is playing Louise Hastings, a psychologist with a strong faith but an open mind. Anair Guerrera, who was in Raising Dion, plays Gabrielle Rosetta, a woman balancing logic and faith. She arrives from the Vatican to help Damon and Hastings uncover new demonic possessions. And Alan Yu, who is playing Chris Yen, Anna's business partner and closest friend, and some would say surrogate brother. That's quite an interesting cast lined up. I don't particularly know the comic book for this, but they're talking about it being a kind of darker thing for Marvel, which is one of the reasons why it's on Hulu and not Disney Plus, because Hulu will allow them to be a lot darker than they could be on the PG-13 rated Disney Plus service. So that's why it's over there. I am disappointed that they're not doing the Ghost Rider series, but at least we're getting one of them out of there.
I was interested when they originally announced the Ghost Rider element, yeah. And I was surprised that this one is above the Ghost Rider. I was genuinely surprised that they went for it. But obviously, we have expectations of Ghost Rider, I suppose, from films, from appearing in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So maybe they're going for something that's a little bit more unknown, and that will help us a little bit.
Yeah, possibly. And
that will get a better drive and a better audience sort of thing. So I'm thinking that in a positive way. I will probably give it a go. I give most of Marvel's a go, even if I don't end up finishing the series, like The Runaways, I never finished in the end, or Cloak and Dagger. I watched like the first couple of episodes of that and just never, again, too much great TV out there, so can't always watch everything. But yeah, I'll probably give this one a go. It sounds interesting. It's got a bit of, it's going to sound really weird, it's got a bit of Grimm to it. Do you remember Grimm?
Yeah.
No, there's something that sort of reminds me of that. Yeah. And so I'm like, oh yeah, I might have a go at that. So
yeah, quite possible. No idea where it'll end up in the UK, because it's a Hulu series, and obviously we don't have Hulu. Hulu and Marvel series have ended up all over the place. Runaways landed on Sci-Fi in the UK. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was on E4. Cloak and Dagger was on Amazon Prime. Channel 4 have taken another Hulu series. So it's really hard to know exactly where it's going to end up. So we'll have to wait and see. But it is still coming, and that one is still out there. I rather suspect they will leave it a little bit and then circle back around to Ghost Rider at some point. So... Because there are a couple of different Ghost Riders as well. So even if it's not a direct continuation of the version that we saw in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is what this TV series was supposed to be, you could maybe do another version, either as a film or a series or something like that. But we'll have to wait and see. But it is a shame that that didn't get picked up. And lastly, Ardalo Hanlon, who stars in Death in Paradise, will be leaving the show in its 9th season, it was announced, which is premiering in January 2020. He's been playing Jack Mooney, D.I. Jack Mooney, since season 6. He's going to make his final appearance next season. He basically said that, I've spent the last 4 summers in Guadeloupe playing Jack Mooney, solving 20 murder cases in my time there. I've been hugely rewarding and an unforgettable experience working with the incredibly talented actors, directors, crew, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, basically he's moving on. That's what he said. What's interesting is previously when they've announced that somebody's leaving, they've then usually pretty much straight away announced who's taking over the role, but they've not done that this time, because obviously this isn't the first time that
it's happened. Yeah,
because Ben Miller started the show, and then Chris Marshall was the lead for a bit, and then O'Hanlon was the lead. So
I've got a theory, Dave.
Go on.
I've got a theory. I think it's going to be a woman.
Yeah, well, I think there is a possibility of that. They did announce there was a female that joined the cast last season, I think. There was a sort of sidekick character that joined. So it's possible that maybe they're just going to up her as the lead, and then... But we'll have to wait and see. There has been a few comments I've seen online about, you know, it'd be good to have a woman in the lead. And there's no reason why not. So, you know, that would be great.
Doctor Who long enough, maybe Death in Paradise is just going to do it a little bit sooner.
Exactly. So if you're a fan of that, they've not announced which episode he's leaving in, but he is leaving in season 9 when it premieres in January 2020. So if you're a fan of Death in Paradise, keep an eye out for that.
I love it because it's always on in the winter.
Yes.
It just is a lovely getaway when you're looking outside at the rain and the wind or the snow, and you can get to watch it. And it's cheesy, it's predictable, it's very Murder, She Wrote for the modern day. And it's just such a good drama. It just gets such strong ratings. And yeah, I'll tune in.
Yeah, the ratings are ridiculous high for that show. It is extremely popular, but so that will be back in January, and you can wrap him up in front of the fireplace, and you can watch people in the Caribbean. So that's all the news we have for this week. Next up, we have an interview. The interview this week is with the composer Chad Cannon, who recently worked on the Netflix documentary series American Factory, which won the Best Director Award for a documentary at Sundance this year, and is the first film released by Barack and Michelle Obama's production company Higher Ground. It is now out on Netflix, so you can go and catch it on there. It explores the industrial rivalry between the US and China, and they recruited Chad to do the music for it. Chad's background is quite diverse. He's worked on a whole range of things from the Hobbit trilogy. He worked with Alexandria Desplat on films like Godzilla. He worked with Studio Ghibli on things like Castle in the Sky and Spirited Away. He worked on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, the Hobbs and Shaw movie. He also worked on the documentary Paper Lanterns as well. He's done a variety of different things, sort of orchestrating and stuff and composing in his own right. So we get to talk to him about a whole bunch of different stuff, including the really interesting music and choices that he had to make for something which is essentially kind of looking at the US and China and how he handles the music for that. Here's the interview with Chad Cannon. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. It's lovely to have you on. Should we just do a little bit of background? How did you get into composing in the first place?
I grew up in a very musical family. My mother was her battle in life was to get all her six children to play music. So before I could play Nintendo every day, I had to practice for an hour or 30 minutes or whatever it was. And I actually hated music until I discovered U2. My goal in life was actually to become Bono, but that didn't pan out very well. So because I was so inspired by all the music that I loved from them and from a bunch of other bands that my older siblings listened to, I started writing songs, and I started a rock band in high school that was basically a U2 imitation band. That led me to become more curious about, well, I played all this classical music growing up. I started violin when I was 4, but I didn't really understand the music theory behind it all. And so that led me on a journey to discover how music really functions and works. And that led to me wanting to become a composer. And in high school, I listened to the Lord of the Rings soundtracks a ton. So Howard Shore was a big influence in my life early on. And then in college, I was studying contemporary concert music composition, a lot of chamber music.
Yeah.
And then post-graduation, when I finished at Juilliard in 2013, and I came to LA and I started working for this guy named Conrad Pope, who's an incredible orchestrator and also composer. And he just happened to be working with Howard Shore on the Hobbit trilogy. And that's where that was my baptism by fire.
Wow.
Was coming into the industry through that gate.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, I go back and obviously look at the IMDb page when I'm interviewing things, and it did rather strike me that the first thing that shows up on there, apart from the odd short movie, is The Hobbit as being something that you were involved with. That's a heck of a place to start.
It was crazy. I mean, it was really incredible, but also incredibly nerve-wracking because it's the first thing I'm doing here and you don't want to screw that one up.
No, not at all.
But luckily, Conrad was an incredible mentor, and having worked with him on, you know, 6 or 7 big films now, I've gone through thousands of pages of his orchestrations and also gotten a lot of feedback from him as far as how to improve my own orchestrations.
Yeah.
That was a really, really great experience. I was very, very lucky to fall into his circle.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And you've also gone on and been composer in your own right, of course, which leads us to American Factory, which is the documentary you've been doing. This is actually released through the Obama's production company. So, another fairly high profile people you're getting involved with.
Exactly. Yeah. They saw the film at Sundance and really loved it, and they acquired it. And it's really exciting, partly because of the impact now it will have that they're attached to the project, that a lot more people will get a chance to see it, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Of course, it was really great that Netflix picked it up. I've been a Netflix subscriber for like a decade now. So it's fun to have a project that's been picked up by them.
Yeah. Netflix is great for distribution, and they have some great documentaries on that.
Yeah, I think they translate into like 20 something languages.
Something ridiculous. Yeah.
The international reach is going to be really broad too, and that's exciting. And Julia and Steve, the directors, who are just incredible human beings and some of the world's greatest documentarians, mentioned that one of the reasons they went with Netflix is because they wanted this to reach the kinds of people who are being portrayed in the film. All these working class Americans who don't necessarily have access to like art theaters,
yeah,
you know, that are only available in some of the big cities or in like really quirky towns that are into that kind of thing. Most places in the US it would be impossible for most people to go see this film in the theater. So
yeah, of course.
The fact that it can be broadcast right into people's homes and in on their devices is really great.
Yeah. One of the reasons that the directors, Julie and Steve, were quite interested in you is because you have quite a background working in Asia and with China.
I have worked a lot in China, and specifically my Harvard thesis project was on Okinawan folk music, and I had visited Fujian province in China, which is one of the closest provinces on the coastline there to Okinawa.
Yeah.
And it so happens that American Factory was filmed in Fujian. The Fuyao Glass, which is the company being portrayed in the film, is headquartered in Fujian. So it was really exciting that like, oh, I've already done some musical research in that part of China, and here we have this great American film that's connected to Fujian. And it made sense that the way I actually got in touch with them was that I had done the Sundance Composer Labs in 2016.
Yeah.
And they have this wonderful program where each year about 10 composers get chosen, and you get to go to Skywalker Ranch, which is George Lucas's place.
Yeah.
And you work with a sound designer and a director, and then there's these Sundance composers that are mentors. I was referred to the project through the labs because they knew I had a lot of experience working in Asia. So they sort of thought, oh, this is an Asia-connected film. Here's an Asian-connected composer.
Yeah.
So that was the way I got in touch with them.
Cool. So the film, the basic premise of it is a Chinese company that is taking over a US factory, and the sort of everything that kind of goes with them trying to do that. That's essentially the sort of basis of it.
Exactly.
In terms of approaching the music for it, were you looking for industrial sounds, or were you trying to kind of work against that?
There were so many industrial sounds already present in the film.
Yeah.
The sound designer, Lawrence Everson, is excellent sound designer. He went to the factory for about 3 or 4 days and he took these really cool microphone setups where he could record like the entire spectrum of sound, right? I don't know, it's like a 6 or 8 mic setup, and then he can, it's like surround, but even more than surround.
Yeah.
A three-dimensional capturing of the sound, I guess. And he shared his sound library with me early on, because I thought, oh, maybe I could go in and find some effects that he had captured and turn them into pads or rhythmicize them so that they can become a bed for composing on top of, stuff like that. And there is a little bit of that we achieved. There's this really beautiful sound that he captured outside the factory where there's a conveyor belt that takes all the broken glass from underneath the workers and dumps it in a big pile outside the factory. And he went and filmed that waterfall of broken glass. And it's just like this weird, gorgeous sort of, it sounds like a digital clinking sound that just never ends. It's like a river of glass, and that sound really was interesting to me. I did use that in a couple spots as like creating an atmosphere of like fragility, because this company and the CEO are taking this huge risk by opening this factory, and it's at first it's not going very well, right? They come across all these big problems, like you know, there's a lot of cultural differences between the US and China, and the Chinese management, you know, had trouble working with American managers at first. And throughout the whole film you feel this sense of fragility, and you also feel that for the American workers who, you know, we have the American dream and all these workers are trying to achieve that, and yet the subtext here is that China is this huge rising economic power, and what's happening to American economic power? It's in this fragile state, right? So
yeah.
So the broken glass sound to me was an attempt to try to like capture that fragility.
Yeah.
But in the final mix, a lot of the stuff I did like that ended up getting removed because there's already so much noise in the film, and Broken Glass does have a lot of white noise overtones, and so it's hard to like use effectively when there's dialogue going
right,
on.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very subtle. You would probably only notice if I sat down and said, oh, there it is, you know,
right,
as you're watching the film. So we found other ways to portray the fragility. Like there's a lot of orchestral textures that I think capture that in various ways. A lot of ostinato patterns that they get tossed around between different groups of instruments. And I feel like the passing around of some of those motifs ends up, to me at least, it feels fragile because it's like, oh, one of them could drop the ball and not get the pattern right, you know?
Right, like, yeah.
As we're recording it, you feel that fragility too.
So Julia talked about using Mozart's Serenade as a sort of touchstone for some of the composing of the new stuff.
Yes. Early on, like in the first or second phone call with Julia and Steve, they said, oh yeah, we went and heard this concert in Ohio recently where it was this Mozart piece for woodwinds, and there was like two French horns and a double bass, and it was just a very dark, interesting sound, and it felt big enough to convey the hugeness of this factory and the hugeness of what's happening between the US and China. And they specifically said, no violins. We don't want violins in the score, which as a violinist, I was like, oh, well, this will be an interesting challenge. The majority of the score is woodwinds. We had, a 9-piece woodwind ensemble, 6-piece brass, and then we had 6 strings, but only cellos and a bass. We did not use violas or violins. It was an interesting challenge, of course, as a composer. I really love, you know, having written a lot of chamber music, it's fun to like go, oh, well, I'm only able to use these instruments for this ensemble. So what can we do with that? You know, it's always a fun challenge, and every score brings its own set of constraints, like budget-wise, of course, but in this case, it was also specific requests from the director. And I thought ultimately the sound ended up working very well against all the factory noise because the woodwinds are so distinctive compared to what you hear in the factory. So I think it complements well.
You mentioned having done stuff with Chinese music before. Were you trying to fold some of that in as well?
Yeah. Another thing I pitched to Julie and Steve was, hey, well, what if I went back to Fujian and found some really great local performers from that part of China? Fujian has its own 2,000-year-old music tradition called Nanyin, N-A-N-Y-I-N. And it literally means southern noise because Fujian's like South China.
Right.
But it's this beautiful, like old operatic chamber ensemble tradition. So I suggested, hey, what if we use something related to that? You know, they entertained the idea and said, well, let's think about it. But ultimately they kind of felt like it might come across as pandering or something.
Right.
When they're these local Ohio filmmakers, they didn't want to like exoticize the Chinese part of this. And they wanted this film also to speak to a really broad audience. And if we made it so specific to China, or at least using so many ethnic elements, it might just make it too specific.
Yeah.
I did end up using a pipa, which is a type of Chinese lute, because I just happened to be working on a Chinese dance commission the same month I was composing for this film. So I did use some of the pipa in the score, but it's very, again, very subtle. I would like have to point it out to you for you to be able to notice it.
Yeah. It's nice to get things like that in though.
Yeah, just a little touch here and there.
A couple of other things you've worked on: Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
That's right.
You worked on orchestrating that.
Very fun. And that team, we also just finished this new Fast
Hobbs
and Furious film.
Yeah, Hobbs and Shaw,
which is on every billboard in the world, it seems like, right now.
Pretty much.
So that opportunity came to me through another excellent orchestrator and composer named Tim Williams, who is often orchestrating the scores of Tyler Bates.
Right. Yeah.
Tyler Bates is a very well-known, he's a rock star, really. Like he plays with all these famous rockers. But he brings on Tim Williams to help him with his sort of orchestral language, because obviously he's a rocker and he knows rock and roll, and he has this really raw energy that's contagious. I love him and his scores. It's been really fun to work on these huge, but you know, lighthearted films that are a little bit of a change of pace from like Godzilla and
Yeah.
And The Hobbit, you know.
And doing documentaries and that sort of stuff, which you're doing.
Exactly, yeah.
Right, yeah. No. In terms of what's next, have you got other things lined up to do?
I do. Unfortunately, I can't really say what they are yet. I'll just say there's a documentary, another documentary in the works, and I'm also working on a big new video game project that's...
You can never talk about those.
Exactly, yeah. I will say we're recording for the video game in London and then in Japan in October, so exciting. And I'm excited for the world to experience the music from that project because it's really exciting.
yes.
But the documentary, I'm also eager to get in. We're about to start it, but I'm eager to get into it because I have some very specific musical ideas that I think are going to work well for this new film, having to do with the ensemble I'm going to use.
Interesting.
Like I was saying earlier, it's always a fun challenge to like have your instrumentation decided and figure out how to use that instrumentation in a way that best works for this film.
Definitely. So last couple of questions. The first one is what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Well, I just got through Catch 22.
Oh, yes. That's great.
Which I think is the best TV series I've ever seen. I mean, yeah. I loved Game of Thrones and my wife and I are kind of into Handmaid's Tale right now. But Catch 22 was an excellent example of how great it can be if you just keep it to 6 episodes.
yeah.
Instead of spinning it into 8 seasons, you know, it does an excellent job. I've read the book Catch 22, of course.
Yes.
And I thought George Clooney just nailed it. Like the casting in that show, and I love the music by Harry and Rupert Gregson Williams. I heard that was the first time that they were collaborating. They're brothers, but it was like the first project that they've ever worked on together or something.
Really?
Everything about that series I just loved.
Yeah.
I was blown away. It's simultaneously like hilarious, but also like heartbreaking and devastating and says so much about how crazy war is.
Yeah.
So that one I just, hands down, that's the best show I've ever seen.
Yeah. No, it was fabulous, that series. It's been running over here as well, and I've been really enjoying it. It's great.
Good.
And lastly, if you could work on any TV series, past, present, or some future thing, what would it be?
Well, I'm also a huge fan of Man in the High Castle. And that project, specifically with its connection to Japan, but also like this reimagining of history and sort of recreating the U.S. as it might have been, had things turned out differently. I just love that kind of thing. And it's a dark series, obviously. And I think like the orchestral music that I write might work kind of well in a series like that.
The composer on it at the moment is Dominic Lewis, who does a fabulous job.
Yes, and it's an excellent score. I really admire what Dominic and Henry Jackman, I think, on the first series.
Yeah. Dominic does an amazing job on it, but Dominic also composes DuckTales as well.
Right, a huge range.
It's just a wonderful juxtaposition between the two things. I really love that.
Yeah, you have to wonder if he's like doing it on the same day.
Yeah, Nazis in the morning, ducks in the afternoon.
That's fantastic. Well, that's one of the great things about what we do as film composers, is such a wide variety of opportunities for expression.
Absolutely. Well, good luck with the new projects and the new documentary. I hope it goes down brilliantly well. But hopefully you can come back on and talk about, I'm very intrigued by the video game. You'll have to come back on and
we'll see how that all turns out.
Awesome. Hopefully we'll talk again at some point.
Great. Yeah. I hope everyone can tune into American Factory. It's a powerful piece. So.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Dave.
No problem. Cheers.
Talk to you later.
Bye. So that was the interview with Chad Cannon, the composer for American Factory. You can see American Factory on Netflix right now. Go and look it up. It's well worth going to watch. Now we've got some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week. We have The Good Doctor returning for its third season on the 15th of October at 9 p.m. I really like this medical drama.
I love it. Really good.
It's fabulous. So, we're very happy to have that back. Sky Witness on the 15th of October, that is back. Should mention, by the way, if you're noticing things not returning to Universal, part of the reason for that is more changes behind the scenes, because Comcast, who now owns Sky, also own Universal, they're moving some of the shows off Universal and onto Sky Witness. So Law and Order SVU will be moving across, and Chicago Med is moving across as well. So it will sit together with Chicago Fire. Chicago PD, unfortunately, is still on Channel 5, isn't it? One of the Channel 5 channels. But yeah, so Chicago Med is moving across and Law & Order SVU is moving across. I haven't got dates for those yet, but they're moving over, just in case you were wondering. The Purge season 2, that is coming to Amazon Prime on the 16th of October. I haven't watched this, but if you like The Purge, it is on there. In the Long Run, which is the Idris Elba comedy, that is coming for season 2 on Sky One on the 16th of October as well. Still Open All Hours, which sees Sir David Jason return to the classic sitcom. That is in its 6th season. That's on the 18th of October at 8 p.m. that returns. Living With Yourself, which gives you not one, but two Paul Rudds. That is coming to Netflix on the 18th of October. I'm very much looking forward to this. Paul Rudd is fabulous, and a show with two Paul Rudds in it, I think, could be highly entertaining. So there is that. There is Modern Love, which is a half-hour romantic comedy series which explores love in all its complex and beautiful forms. That is coming to Amazon Prime on the 18th of October. We have Looking for Alaska, which is a miniseries coming to BBC Three, created by Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, based on the novel by the same name. That is on the 19th of October. That lands on BBC Three. Then we have lots of comic book things. Supergirl coming to Sky One for season 5. That is on the 21st of October at 8 p.m. Watchmen, that series comes to Sky Atlantic on the 21st of October at 2 a.m. in a simulcast with the US, and then we'll be on at 9 or 10 p.m. in the evening as well. Very much looking forward to that. If you want to know more about Watchmen, we are doing a weekly podcast over at Entertainment Talk with Matt. So there'll be a weekly podcast on Watchmen, which I think is called Watching the Watchmen, but I don't quote me on that. So that is going out on Entertainment Talk as well. But Watchmen, Sky Atlantic, 21st of October. Dave Gorman returns with a new show called Terms and Conditions Apply, which is pretty much like his old show, except he has some celebrity guests in it, as far as I could tell. That's coming to Dave on the 21st of October at 10 p.m. I love Dave Gorman, so I'm very happy that's there. And The Flash season 6 coming to Sky One on the 22nd of October at 8 p.m. that returns. So lots of things returning.
My anxiety's already started again. It's this time of year where I'm like, there are some gonna have to be some harsh cuts in my life, and that means there are some of those programs I'm not gonna watch. Yeah, all the ones, I think majority of those I do want to watch. Oh, Dave, I can't.
Yes,
I can't
hope. there is a lot of things going to be coming, and it's only going to get worse as we get through towards the end of the year and the start of next year as well. There's going to be more things. You're going to have Apple Plus launching in November. At some point, probably next year, you're going to end up with the Disney Plus streaming service. As we were talking about earlier, we may have a Warner streaming service. There's going to be stuff all over the place. It's going to be crazy.
It's supposed to ease my anxiety, make it worse.
Oh, dear. All right, so that's everything we have for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to mention.
Nope, that's absolutely everything.
So where can they find you?
If they want to follow me on Twitter, I'm on @GreyTheGeek. You'll find me mainly complaining about consumers, companies out there, asking for some support with their bad customer service, but also I do tweet about programs and films that I see every so often.
Yes, and for us, if you want to go to geektown.co.uk throughout the week, you can see all the latest air date information and TV news. There's loads and loads of stuff going up over there. We have air dates for US and UK TV as well now. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/Geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/Geektown, and on Instagram @GeektownUK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, that, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author Elizabeth Gilbert about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.